Welcome everyone to the first episode of season 3, I believe, of Sports with Carney. But we're gonna maybe have to rename it Sports with Carney, featuring Dakota Lamb. As we got a new co-host here. Dakota, how are you today?
I'm good, Logan. Thanks for adding me onto the show here.
So thanks for joining the regular old dynamic duo here, Sports with Carney, with Logan Carney and Dakota Lamb. Maybe working title in progress. But we're just gonna dive in. We got a jam-packed show ahead of you. We got an exciting quiz that we're gonna take.
I'm very excited for this.
Well, very excited. We're gonna find out. You guys gotta stay tuned to find out. We'll do it a little bit later. But we're gonna talk Steelers, Penguins, RMU. They just had their homecoming football game. College football rankings. Pitt football. Oh, jeez.
Some MLB playoffs in there?
Of course. And in fact, you know what? Why don't we just start with MLB playoffs? Now, I haven't been as interested. What's interesting to me is that, well, actually, what's not interesting to me is that I haven't been interested in the MLB playoffs this year because, you know, the Buccos just, the season was so up and down.
Yeah, it was.
The last month, I just stopped caring.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the end of the season, they really started to push for it again, and there was like this outside chance that maybe they would work their way into a wild card spot or at the very least mess up the standings for the Cubs, the Cardinals. But in the end, they did none of that.
They were splitting with the Cubs was a big reason they had to play game 163. So there is a little bit of a moral. Yeah. I don't know why I'm not speaking right today, but a moral victory in the fact that the Pirates.
I guess you could say they played a role in their defeat there.
Yeah, and of course, who doesn't like what's better than the Cubbies going down?
That was a beautiful thing. So it's interesting. You said you're not really following the playoffs this year. It's kind of the opposite for me. Whereas last year when the Pirates were out, I was not interested at all. Really didn't follow anything. But this season, I think it had something to do with the tiebreaker games and the excitement of that. But
game 163s were awesome.
Yeah,
I mean it's what,
because the Cubs lost.
Yeah, because the Cubs lost.
That's why it was so awesome.
I mean, anytime the Cubbies lose, it's a victory for America. I mean, I know when they raised the L, America raised the W.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
But I mean, looking at the standings, I mean, I've followed it. I haven't been watching it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been keeping track of everything. But the only series that really interests me out of all of these, I mean, I know the Brewers beat the Rockies.
Yeah, already done.
Yeah, swept the Rockies. The Braves won yesterday against the Dodgers. They're trying to mount a comeback. But, you know, Houston 2-0 on the Indians.
Yeah.
The only one that's really interesting is the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, who doesn't love that rivalry? I hate both of those teams, but
as do I.
it is, you know, they're two of the two power hitting clubs, two clubs with a lot of star power. Back to the olden days when, you know, when we were growing up and we had them, Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz and Pedro Martinez going up against Andy Pettit and Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter, all Alex Rodriguez, all those guys.
Yeah, it's really a rebirth for those teams. And in Pittsburgh, we have a rooting interest with Walker and McCutchen on the Yankees, making that a little interesting. And it just how good those two teams were during the regular season is really interesting that they're meeting. First off, that one of them had to play in the wild card game. I know we talked last week when that wild card game was happening that what the changes to the playoff format might be if the Yankees had lost that wild card game. I think, fortunately for the commissioner, that didn't happen.
It's completely ridiculous, by the way, because the Yankees were in the wild card game last year, and they had the same conversations. You know, on my opinion, though, I like the one game wild card format. I know I'm in a minority. I think there's one other way that I would do it, and that's how South Korea does it. I don't know if you know.
I'm not familiar. Enlighten me, please.
So South Korea does it. The two teams in the playoffs, in the wild card playoff, the higher seed is on the road, all right? There's two games. It's a doubleheader. The higher seed has to only win one of those two the lower seed who's hosting has to win both of them. And they take place on the same day because they're a doubleheaders game.
I think I would like that.
You think you like that?
Yeah.
16 hours of baseball in 2 days. if the home team won the first one, that's 16 hours of baseball. You know how much money that would be?
Yeah, and I think the tiebreaker kind of complicates things there. And the way that the playoffs begin so shortly after the regular season ends that you have a potential maybe for like 4 games in 3 days.
I mean, actually, that's something that would be a problem. But, you know, first of all, you should win the division so you don't have to play in that wild card series. Second of all, since they're a doubleheader, you could use the doubleheader role and bring up a 26 man.
Sure.
And the other thing, I lost my train of thought for a second. But the other thing is you're going up against a team with the same struggles, all right? You mm-hmm. have an opponent with the same struggles.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you give it 3 days, though, if you give them a 3-game series, which is what, you know, everybody is basically asking for,
yeah,
you're going to have teams with every other team is going to have a week off before their games. And you're going to have a week with just 6 games.
Yep.
I mean, that's a big ratings dump for a sport like baseball.
And I think there is part of the magic to the MLB postseason is you start thinking about it a couple weeks before the regular season ends as teams start to clinch and the wild card race becomes more apparent. And to have that stop for a whole week to let those wild card series play out, I think would be a detriment. Where do you stand on divisions in general? Do you like this current format where it is geographically based, that those teams in those three zones automatically get the berth and then anyone can play in that wild card game?
I like divisions mainly because it's similar to conferences in college sports, even though conferences can, you know, teams can obviously move and change conferences. But looking at divisions in other sports outside the NBA, where divisions are meaningless, the NHL divisions are large, you know, so they're also pretty meaningless. But looking at, you know, the NFL specifically, the MLB, the divisions in conferences, they always fluctuate in which one is the best one.
Yeah.
You know, one year it's the Big Ten over the SEC. Next year it's the SEC over the Big Ten for college football. There was the one year the Seahawks went 7-9, made the playoffs. Next year they had three very competitive teams. And the Seahawks, those good Niners when Harbaugh was still there, and the Cardinals. And then now that division is horrible again. And then the same thing happens with the MLB, you know, where the Pirates division 3 years ago, top three, 3 years ago. Man, it was only 3 years ago. It feels so far away. But three years ago, I feel like I should be saying time after time. Time after time. Just 3 years ago, the Pirates had the second best record in baseball. The Cubs had the third best record in baseball. And they had three teams borderline 100 wins.
Yep.
So it is something that switches a lot. Even this year, you know, yes, the Yankees division, you know, and the Red Sox division, phenomenal division. They had three teams. How many did the Rays win? Did they end up winning 96 or something, 92?
Around there.
The Rays ended up winning mid-90s in games. So they had three teams with at least mid-90s wins. And the Pirates division, you know, Central, was the only one with four teams to finish above 500. You know, it's something that, you know, it changes a lot. You know, whereas, you know, the Indians division was ridiculously bad this year. A couple years ago, they had the Royals, they had the Tigers.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that changes a lot. So I like the division format, mainly because, yes, it's unfair to you 1 year, but another year it may be fair to you. It may benefit you. So it's in the long run, it's fair.
Yes, and I think that's right. And I think that even though we've gotten to a point in baseball where the geography really doesn't matter much anymore in terms of transportation, and, you know, the Pirates were always accustomed to those long West Coast road trips, there is still something to be said about having rivals that are somewhat close to you, being Cincinnati, Chicago's getting a little further away. And I think that there could be realignment.
It's getting further away. It's on the fault lines.
In terms of like
break off
drivable distance, if we're in pure geography, you know, we have the problem of the two leagues. But
yeah, and I mean, they used to be in the old NL East with, but that also, I mean, it changed whenever they added the Marlins. And for whatever reason, you know, the Braves were in the NL West. So, of course, the Pirates were the ones that were going to get the short end of that stick because, you know, the Cardinals and the Cubs all wanted to play together. The Pirates wanted to play with the Reds. And but it is a little bit sad that you don't have that. I mean, you kind of have it, but not so much anymore. The Pirates-Phillies rivalry, which is dead.
Yep.
Pirates-Mets, which used to be a good rivalry, is now gone. But, you know, geography, in terms of divisions, I mean, maybe they should work it better. It's better than how it is in the NFL, where
the
Indianapolis Colts are in the AFC South, which makes no sense whatsoever. The Miami Dolphins. I don't know why I was thinking hockey teams. Man, I'm just first episode of the year, ladies and gentlemen. This is just
shake
just
off
going,
the cobwebs. Yeah,
the pregame first episode jitters. But the Miami Dolphins, where they had they're in the AFC East, and every other team is up north. they're so far south where they can be in the AFC South, and then you maybe put the Ravens in the AFC East, and then you put the Colts in the AFC North. And all of a sudden, everything just makes much more sense geographically.
Yes,
you know, and you don't have those teams making those drives. And what? Who are going to be the Colts' rivals in that division? Does the Jacksonville Jaguars really care about what the Colts have to do? Jacksonville Miami could be a great rivalry, but I know you also have Dolphins and Patriots. Colts Patriots have a rivalry, even though they're not in the same division. But
that's where I kind of lean with the way that transportation for these teams really isn't much of a problem anymore. You can get rid of the geographical titles. Don't call them East, West, South. Just form your divisions. Form them with rivals that the league thinks will be good.
Do them like the Big Ten did with the legends and the leaders.
I don't know if you saw this, but over the summer, Jason Stark wrote about realign. If they added two more teams, and they would have to realign Major League Baseball to just get rid of the two leagues and the potential. Divisions that would result.
No,
when
I didn't read that.
He went geographically. I'll see if I got it here. But he went somewhat geographically, but they did not name them after locations. They were named after like former MLB players.
I did see that.
Yeah, so they had the MLB East and the West, splitting the country East and West. No more American League and National League, which brings up a lot of problems that I don't think he really addressed when he formed those divisions.
It's such a drastic change.
Yeah. But he had the Pirates in the splinter division with the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, and the Phillies.
Oh, that'd be interesting. I don't know if I – you can't split up the Yankees and the Red Sox.
No, I
agree.
I think that's the big problem with that.
Yeah, just like you can't split up the Dodgers and Giants. You can't split up I don't know. What's another big one? Pirates and Reds.
The NL Central.
When they're beaming each other.
We've clamored, at least we were back when the Pirates were a contending team, about how unfair the division was. But I think we would miss it if it wasn't that way.
I would miss it a little bit. I mean, I still miss the old Big East, even though the ACC is so much better for Pitt. So.
Yeah.
here's a question to you, Dakota. So let's say that you're a commissioner of MLB. You're the commissioner.
Okay.
So you're the top dog. What cities are you expanding to?
It's tough because it's not like hockey, I feel like, where you're kind of saturated in where you go and now they're adding these cities and people are getting frustrated with it. I think you can add more baseball cities and it's not going to be as much of a detriment. I think on the West Coast, you could probably add a team in Oregon.
Portland?
Yeah.
You go Portland?
Yeah. Other than that, you know, looking around in New England area, it's not like football where they have that one team to root for, which I think is a good thing, how they split it up city-wise. You could add more on the East Coast, the Carolinas, get some kind of baseball team, whether it's a shared team or put it in Charlotte or something like that. And then I know people have talked about adding another to Texas, putting one in Austin maybe.
You know where I'd go? My two places. And I'm serious about this. I you may
I'm
laugh.
I'm afraid we're going to go here.
So my first one, you bring back the Expos. You need to bring back the Expos. All right. Yeah. The Expos need to come back. I just love the M logo. Just mainly bring it back. All right. They still have the stadium there. They didn't even tear it down. They're expecting a team to come back at some point. Granted, the fans were as bad as LA football fans, and that's why they left. All right. Granted. And people still came for, and people clamor for LA football back. And guess what? The fans still aren't showing up to that.
Yep.
But if I'm, so I'm putting a team in Montreal. Now, the second team that I'm putting, I'm going international again. I'm expanding to two countries.
Oh, wow.
We're making, because you know what? They say it's the World Series, but there's one team in a different country. So we're going to have three teams out of the States in three different countries. We're going to Mexico City.
All right. I was not expecting you to go there.
Where the elevation is about three times the size of Denver. So every single time.
What division are you putting them in, Logan?
Well, we'll have to rework the division. I feel like a team in Mexico City could form a great, have a bunch of great series with the Diamondbacks. That's their geographic rival right there. And every single time, you know, every single MLB slugger would go there. We would have guys hitting 100 home runs. If they could play,
wow.
Can you imagine if Barry Bonds played his days in
Mexico City? Why stop there? Why not put a team in Cuba? Put them in a division with the Marlins.
Well, I mean,
play as an extension.
I mean, that's a different. Do we really want to put them in, you know, a communist country? Two years ago, the
MLB played some games in Cuba.
I don't know. I thought it was Puerto Rico. They had to cancel because the Pirates and the Marlins were going to play in Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah, before the hurricane.
No, it was the, what's it called, virus? It was Zika. No. It was the Zika virus, right?
I thought they were in Cuba, too.
They might have been. I know they've been playing a lot of international games.
All right, so.
Because they played in Australia. They've played in
How about a Puerto Japan. Rican team?
I could see a Puerto Rican. How is Puerto Rican's market?
I mean, that's not a huge population, but if you put one professional sports team tied back to the mainland United States, plus they're known for baseball.
Well, Mexico City's population is 700,000 bigger than New York City.
They would have no problem filling that stadium. I don't doubt that.
And then, I mean, let's look at the elevation of Mexico. 7,382 feet. Let's compare that to Denver, shall we? Oh, there we go. Da-da-da-da. Oh, that's in meters. Why is it in meters?
Yeah, why did they do that?
5,280 feet. So it's 2,000 feet higher in Mexico City. Now, that is where I want to see a baseball team. I want to see a ball go out of the park at every single at-bat. Those games would be so much fun to watch. Pitchers would hate it. Pitchers would hate it so much.
Yes, yes. You've got a huge problem, really, with the games being played in Mexico City and how they would influence the stats.
You'd be getting all the great hitters would want to go play there just so they can beef up all their statistics.
Exactly.
You'd have to get like guys like the old Ian Snell to come out of retirement to play.
Yes.
Speaking of old Pirates, though.
While you pull that up, one quick follow-up. They did, in 2016, play the Tampa Bay Rays played in Cuba in front of 50,000 fans.
Oh. So you are right, then. So maybe 50,000.
Yeah. So I mean,
they can get 50,000
like
to 81.
Historic thing, but.
81 games.
I don't know. They were in a national stadium, and they played. This was like a modified spring training game, and they played the Cuban national team.
See, the problem is Puerto Rico is also part of the U.S., and I want to go international.
Right. You know? So, yeah.
So we need to go to two
Mexico,
countries. Mexico City.
Canada and Cuba.
That's unfortunate. I don't want to go to Cuba.
All right.
We'll go put a team in London, like before the NFL does. If I was a commissioner of baseball, we're going to London before the NFL. I don't even know.
I just don't think the travel would work for the 162 game schedule. Oh. Even to Mexico City, I think would complicate things. That every time you have a team, other than like the Texas and Arizona teams playing in Mexico City, you're going to have to add built-in off days for travel because of it.
Well, how far away is New York to LA?
So New York it's a far distance, but yeah, you have the logistical issues of there's no customs and like international.
You don't have to
deal with the international borders
you're traveling. Yeah, but what about LA to Toronto?
Yeah. I would imagine that there's probably something in there where there is a built-in off day for those teams already.
LA to Toronto. So New York to LA is just under 3,000 miles. New York to Mexico City.
If you do this, I think you have to lessen the schedule from 162 games. You have to go down a little
bit and
add some more off days.
So it's actually shorter distance to Mexico City from New York than it is to LA.
Interesting.
So, I mean, if they can make that New York to LA trip for the Yankees Angels series.
I don't think there's as much culture shock going New York to LA, but sure. It is a shorter distance. I'll give you that.
So we pulled up this quiz here. We're going to find out which 2015 Pittsburgh Pirate we are. This is from the MLB postseason quiz series of 2015. So Dakota, it looks like there's 8 questions. So Dakota, why don't we start with you?
Okay.
Let's find out which fictional pirate you are. So, 2015 Pittsburgh Pirate. So, who is your fictional pirate? You can be Captain Hook, Jack Sparrow, Sir Davos, Dread Pirate Roberts. I don't know who that is. That's an interesting guy. Long John Silver. Apparently, he's not just a restaurant guy.
Oh, wow.
Or Han Solo.
First off, how do you feel about defining Han Solo as a pirate?
I mean, he's a smuggler, I guess. He's a space pirate. I mean,
I got to go Captain Hook. I think that Peter Pan is up there as a classic Disney movie. Got to go Captain Hook.
You're a Captain Hook guy?
Yeah, I'll go with him.
Who's your favorite racing pierogi? Making his return in this list, by the way, the great Potato Pete. Yeah. Rest in peace, wherever you may be.
Yeah, so this list is slightly out of date now. Well, shuffled up the... who do we add? Pizza Penny this
year. Pizza Penny. And they still have Pete come out. But he's just... They come out to be a jerk to take out the other. Like he's a jerk, but...
I believe 2015 was the first year for Bacon Burt. I wasn't a fan of his addition. I'm gonna go Oliver Onion.
That's a good one. I'm personally a salt guy. Choose a breakfast beverage. Oh, I don't know.
They're not labeled, so we've got to guess by the picture here. I'm gonna assume that bottom left one is tea, and we'll go with that.
Bottom left.
Yeah, right there. What do you you think that's an apple juice?
I thought the tea was above. What treasure would you steal from an ancient cave? This is getting very interesting.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. Who do you think? You think McCutcheon stealing the gold coins?
How do you think they did this? They quizzed all the pirates and matched up your answers. Because
this is the MLB, ladies and gentlemen, this is the MLB.com official website, by the way. So this is not like
this is legitimate.
This is not a BuzzFeed, we're on right now.
Again, these aren't labeled, so we've got to guess from the picture.
This might be a bunch of old books.
Gold coins. We'll go with the diamond. I have no
idea.
I
think that's
what we've
McCutcheon. I
top,
think the
right?
diamond's McCutcheon. Gold coins is Garrett Cole. That just seems like it. High socks or low cuffs?
Easy high socks.
Oh, choose a superhero. The Hulk, Donatello, Scorpion, or Alf?
Wow. Stretching the definition of superhero a little bit. We'll go Hulk.
The Hulk. All right, here we go with the Hulk. Where would a treasure map lead you? Empty fields. Well, that's not empty fields. That's Iowa. Home, high seas, or treacherous mountains?
Wow. I'll go high seas. Stick with the Pirates theme as best as possible.
Which Pirate fan are you most like? There's a video of a guy walking
across.
Throwback
to 2015 when Root Sports loved to show that guy on the unicycle every broadcast.
juggling light up. Are those
Yeah, he would juggle like light up
bowling
pins on the Clemente Bridge every game.
Are you jumping in the river for a ball, or are you going to be Little Alvarez?
Little Alvarez. That is
a
good memory
choice.
From 2015.
You are Francisco Cervelli.
I like it.
That's an interesting one. I kind of like Cervelli. I mean, you're the anchor of your friend group and the one who sings along to Frank Sinatra songs when they come on.
I would love to know. I want to see the video of Cervelli taking this quiz and explaining why he picked those particular people like, that I just
the order
did.
What was it? I want to know what you're thinking. Yeah. You're like, I am Sir Davos. All right, so let's do mine. My favorite fictional pirate. I'm gonna go. Again, yeah, I don't know if Han Solo is a smuggler, not a pirate. I think there's a difference. I'm going to go Sir Davos because I recently got into Game of Thrones and he's pretty cool.
Okay.
Look at Sir Davos. He's a nice guy. Sauerkraut Saul is the best pierogi. I don't care what anybody says. Sauerkraut Saul is the best pierogi. He will, you know, at my funeral, I want Sauerkraut Saul to be a pallbearer. That's on my list. Again, these pictures for favorite breakfast.
Back to the pirates list real quick. The Dread Pirate Roberts is from The Princess Bride.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I know what's his name was in that, wasn't it?
Andre the Giant?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. See, I would have thought Cervelli would have chosen that. He would have known the Princess Bride backstory. Which beverage did you pick there?
I picked the coffee that was like an iced coffee.
Okay.
It was whipped cream on it. What would I steal from an ancient cave? I feel like this weapon would be pretty cool. I'll take that. I don't know. I'd probably steal all of them. Definitely high socks. Who doesn't use high socks?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And Alf. Alf is the greatest superhero.
Yeah, I was on the fence there.
And we're going to go to the empty... Well, treacherous mountains don't sound good. Home. Home is where your heart is, so I don't... That could be anywhere. I mean...
That's true.
I don't want to see you.
Okay.
I don't want to steal your... So I'm going to go to Iowa in the empty fields.
Okay.
You know, Field of Dreams, baby. Which pirate fan are you most like? Oh, Little Alvarez. You guys stick with Little Alvarez.
Who will this be?
Pedro Alvarez.
I'm glad you got someone that is no longer here from the 2015 team. I felt a little let down with the Cervelli still being here.
You're Pedro Alvarez. You're focused and committed to everything you do, but particularly when it comes to hitting home runs on the boats. You are really, really committed to hitting home runs on the boats. Of all the people, I like how they say he's focused and committed. He was so mentally not there during those years.
Man, I mean... Of all the Alvarez moments that stick out, it's got to be that 2015 wildcard game where he did not get the start. Sean Rod got the start. That, to me, is like the defining Clint Hurdle decision so far in his tenure.
Yeah, I mean, and then it's still the one of the greatest Pirate moments is Sean Rod beating
the water. Would we have had that if he didn't start that game? Probably not.
Yeah, probably
so,
not
yeah,
at all.
I guess it all worked out.
Yeah, I mean, I still would have went with Pedro, though. I would have went with Paige.
Yeah, as would have I.
So, your final question, we'll move on. We're 30 minutes into this show. Wow, man.
Baseball heavy.
This is a baseball heavy show. So, who's your World Series pick? And don't give me any reasons why. Just give me your World Series pick.
All right.
How the teams remain.
I'm going to pull up the current records here in this series.
They're all right here.
Okay. I'm going to go from the American League. I believe that the Yankees will upset the Red Sox in this series, if you could call it an upset, being the wildcard team, and I think they'll go all the way to the World Series. And then from the National League, I'm going the Milwaukee Brewers.
Brew Crew.
Yes.
Brew Crew and Yankees. Who are you taking?
I'll take the Yankees in that.
I'm going – now, see, my original pick was the Indians and the Brewers because baseball playoffs are weird.
Yep, yep.
That being said, I don't see the Astros pitching staff blowing a two-game lead.
Right.
So I'm going to switch my Indians pick with the Astros, and I'm going to stick with the Brewers. I'm saying Astros over Brewers. I love what the Brewers did with their hitting, but when it comes down to it, there's Verlander, Morton, Cole, all these guys. That is too tough to beat. There's not a team that has anywhere near as good pitching as they do in the postseason.
Now, I think Yelich could... carry that team on his own shoulders.
I mean, their offense is great.
Yeah.
You know, they're in their infield. It's phenomenal. They get guys. I remember that when they acquired a lot of these guys where they acquired a lot of these guys and just put them in positions they've never played before.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, moving on to some college football.
Okay.
The new rankings dropped yesterday? Yesterday. Yesterday, because yesterday was Sunday, because my show is on Monday now. It used to be on Thursday. But our show is on Monday. Gotta make sure I keep track of that. But the new rankings drop for college football, and the national champion from last year is ranked 10th in college football playoff rankings. You know who UCF, the real national champion. So, did you get a chance to see the rankings for the college football playoffs?
I saw the headline with Alabama, but I have them pulled up now to catch up. I think it's interesting that Penn State is still in that top 10.
They weren't in it. I don't think they were 11th last week after they lost to Ohio State, too. They move up on the bye week.
Yeah, that's, man.
Yeah, I would not have. I agree with the top six. I like how the tops, I mean, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, West Virginia. That, to me, is the top six.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't change any of those top six.
Yeah, and then Washington, Penn State, Texas, UCF. Texas, who went 6-6 last year, is 5-1 this year, so they can go 1-5 and finish off the same record as last year.
Yep.
But the real national champion still outside of the top 10. What do they have to do to get in that top 10? I mean, it's not like they're beating bad teams. I mean, they're in the American Athletic Conference is not as bad as people think it is. It's not. Oh, granted, it is no ACC. It is no Big Ten. It is no Pac-12. It is no Big 12. It is no SEC. It is not a Power 5 conference. But you know, they're playing teams that really aren't that bad. I mean, it's not like they're beating up all these teams. I mean, they beat Pitt 45-14. Pitt's not an average team that looks like this year.
Yeah,
and that's being polite.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
SMU 48-20. They beat Florida Atlantic 56-36, who has Lane Kiffin as their head coach, and Florida Atlantic had a very good year last year.
To get a little conspiratorial, if that UNC game hadn't been postponed and they had won that game, do you think they'd be in the top 10?
I think they'd be top 10. I think them being 6-0, UNC's not a horrible team. It's not like that win adds to their strength of schedule or anything, but I think 6-0 and 5-0 is a big difference.
Yeah, I agree.
It's bad for them that they don't play Cincinnati and South Florida to their last 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then they'll take on presumably one of those two teams in the conference championship game. But because I assume the American Athletic, they have a conference championship game, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to take on one of those two teams in the conference championship game. They don't play those two to the last 2 weeks of the season, which stinks because those are really the two teams that in the conference outside of them that would give them, you know, an argument to be in it. If they go undefeated again and miss out on the college football playoff, but win in the New Year's Six bowl game again, would you back up their claim that they deserve a national title?
I would back up the claim that they have been really pushed out of it by this format that the NCAA has set up. And I think that there is this built-in bias for big-name schools, which is interesting considering the people that sit on the selection committee, I think, they've tried to branch out to not just those powerhouse schools to make that as fair as possible in terms of the college football playoff. I think that these rankings at this point in the season are unfortunately playing too big of a role in that later decision.
What's interesting is, you know, one of our very own, Chris Howard, is on the college football playoff board. Maybe we can get an interview just to see why he's not taking UCF. But on my opinion, UCF, considering they still have the longest winning streak active in college football, in my opinion, they should be 7th. They should at the very least be at the end of the undefeated teams. I mean, of course, South Florida's undefeated, Cincinnati's undefeated, NC State's undefeated, Colorado's undefeated. All those teams are ranked. But UCF, to me, should be 7th at the very least. I don't think they're better than Bama. I don't think they're better than Georgia. I don't think they're better than Ohio State. I don't think they're better than Clemson. I don't think they're better than Notre Dame. And I don't think maybe they're better than West Virginia. I think Will Grier is going to be the Heisman. I think Will Grier is a phenomenal quarterback. And I think that puts West Virginia in the CFP at the end of the year. But there's no reason for me that Penn State should be ahead of them. There's no reason for me that Washington should be ahead of them. There's no reason Texas should not have jumped 10 spots and jumped UCF.
It's interesting that they are one spot higher when pulling the coaches instead of the AP poll?
You mean the other way around? Yeah.
The UCF.
UCF. Yeah, UCF is behind them in the AP poll. Yeah, I thought you meant Texas was ahead in the AP.
UCF specifically. Yeah,
they are, and because Texas, the big difference is Texas is 14th in the coaches poll.
Yep.
And they are ninth in the AP poll.
Yes. So let's put a hat on here. Let's say you're Chris Howard on this college football playoff committee. Are you putting any stock in either of these polls? And if you are, which one are you looking to more, the AP or the coaches?
AP, because it's always been kind of the premier poll. I mean, you got to look at both. You do.
Yeah, but I think I value the opinion of those coaches a little bit more in terms of probably not being as, you know, I'll take that back, actually, before it even comes out of my mouth, not being as biased in their rankings. I think there probably still is some bias in that. And if I'm on the committee, I'm probably not putting much stock into either of the polls because of that reason.
Yeah, I think when UCF, you look at UCF and they've played, they scheduled Power 5 Pittsburgh. Granted, Pittsburgh's 3-3 and not that great. They've gotten blown out.
Yeah.
They scheduled UNC. It got postponed. That's not their fault.
Correct.
So it's not like they aren't scheduling cupcakes. They schedule two Power 5 teams. And of course, when they schedule these games, they don't know how these teams are going to be because they scheduled them years in advance.
Correct.
They also got top 25 teams, South Florida and Cincinnati, on their schedule. Now, who knows if they're top 25 by the time they play.
Mm-hmm.
But there's two top 25 games, two Power 5 games that end up being one if they don't reschedule the UNC game. Really, what it might be important if UNC, if it comes to the end of the year, and not UNC, UCF. If UCF, it comes to the end of the year, and they're 11-0, they have to play that UNC game, because that is the borderline. I don't think you can not take UCF in the college football playoff. If they go undefeated again for a second consecutive year, I don't think you can do that.
I'll make the prediction right now that even if they go undefeated, I still don't think they'll end up in that college football playoff. I think that there's just such this level of prestige and this idea that you have to put these well-known schools for the revenue that it generates and for the television publicity, even though I think I agree with you, the UCF is a better story and probably get more people interested in that college football playoff to begin with. I just think there's this inherent problem with how those teams are picked that they won't end up in it again.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And if they don't,
I don't know how you fix it, but
in my opinion, here's how they should do it. Expand it to 8 teams. Power 5 conference winners all get in automatic bids. All right?
Okay.
And then you take the top group of 5 team, which would be UCF. And then you take 2 at-large bids. So presumably the person who doesn't win the SEC out of Georgia, Bama, or unfortunately Penn State or Notre Dame. Notre Dame would probably be the other at-large bid in this scenario. Although if this is how college football ever adopts it, Notre Dame would probably be forced to join the ACC, because why would you risk. You know, when you have an easier route of just winning the conference.
Yeah, I think that makes conferences really interesting if that is how they would switch to doing it, to picking from those 5, because you're going to have a lot of schools thinking about changing or shuffling or maybe changing more often, which kind of changes a lot of the commitment to those different conferences and how long that they stay a part of it and how the history of those conferences kind of stays intact over long periods of time.
I mean, we've already seen that with the last conference realignment, when we saw Maryland leave, we saw Missouri leave, Texas A&M left to go to the SEC, left the
Big
12.
I think you see that to a higher degree.
Yeah. Although it brings me back to the old college football video games. I don't know if you ever played when they had the conference realignment the last year. You want to hear my dream ACC?
Okay, yeah, I do.
All right, here's my dream ACC. The ACC South. I have the ACC South and the ACC North. I know we discussed how we don't like to name things geographically earlier with the baseball divisions. But I'm going ACC. I have everything on my phone. Look, I have all notes about my college.
This archive here.
Every single season, well, where my team was ranked each week. Two-time ACC champion, by the way, in 3 years. I'm just saying. But anyway, my dream ACC. The North Division, or South Division, we'll start with that. Clemson, South Carolina. So I'm having South Carolina rejoin the ACC.
Yep.
North Carolina, Duke, NC State, West Virginia. Wake Forest, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. That is my dream ACC South. My ACC North, going Pitt, Penn State, West Virginia, Notre Dame, Temple, Syracuse, Cincinnati, and either Maryland or Boston College. I'm not kind of sold. Either one of those two.
I think the ship may have sailed out of those two.
Yeah, well, the ship may have sailed with Maryland. I think you could also put Maryland in the old South Division and have the original eight ACC teams in one division, and then put Virginia Tech in the North Division. You kind of get like an old Big East type of vibe with Cincinnati, Temple, Syracuse, West Virginia, Pitt, and then you just have Penn State, Notre Dame. But that is my dream ACC right there.
All right. All right. I don't think we'll ever see it happen, but okay.
Yeah, never say never. Isn't that Justin Bieber? Never say never. Oh, man. 40 minutes of show. I mean, we still got time left. We still got 19 minutes left, man. What is next on our agenda?
Talk a little NFL quickly about this weekend's big headlines.
Oh, I mean, big headlines. Steelers finally won.
So I'm interested to hear the kind of viral Twitter tweet after this game was the stats comparison of James Conner and Le'Veon Bell. The numbers, you'd think they speak for themselves, but I don't know necessarily that they do. Where do you fall on that?
You know, in my opinion, the whole James Conner, Le'Veon Bell talk is just getting, it's kind of like beating a dead horse at this point, where it's every time, I feel bad for Conner, because every single time he touches the ball, the announcer's first thought is, there's James Conner who went to Pitt and beat cancer, and he's only playing because Le'Veon Bell is in a contract holdout.
Yep.
You know, and nobody's realizing that, hey, this guy is a great player.
Yep.
You know, they're saying the same storylines over and over again. These are storylines that we know. These are storylines that we've heard. He's been in the league for 2 years now. You know, and we know all this stuff.
And he's still stuck with that same rookie, as he came in as a rookie storyline, with now the addition of Le'Veon Bell as another thing that doesn't really relate to him taking over his story.
Exactly. I mean, the ESPN Monday Night Football game with the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Horrible broadcast. Absolutely horrible broadcast. They had that guy that was just going up and down the sideline of the crane the whole game. And I remember the fourth quarter, 8 minutes left of the game. All right. It was a close game. And the guy that's going up and down the field on the crane comes in like, yeah, this is why Le'Veon Bell is holding out. Like, we know why Le'Veon Bell is holding out. You said it 8 times. And be like, yeah. And then be sure to stay tuned as we got an interview with Steph Curry after the game. Well, ESPN, great job, ESPN, on Monday night.
So we're turning into an ESPN criticism here, which could take up a bunch of shows.
Oh, man. I don't know. Yeah, we can't really get into that, too. I mean, no. I may try and get a job by ESPN at some point.
I was about to do that when the mics are turned off.
Yeah, I mean, okay. ESPN, I think you're great. You're the worldwide leader in sports for a reason, but that broadcast was bad. It was a bad, bad, bad broadcast. I mean, you shouldn't promote a Steph Curry interview throughout the entire game or an NFL game. I'm sorry, but if I wanted Steph Curry, I'd be watching basketball. I wouldn't be watching NFL. It's a football season, all right?
Very fair, very fair. to read these stats, this is the tweet that went viral yesterday. This is James Conner through the first 5 games of this season, Le'Veon Bell through the first 5 games of last season. Rushing yards, 342, Conner, 371, Bell. 4.1 yards per carry for Conner, 3.6 for Bell. 200-yard games for Conner, only one for Bell. 27 receiving yards for Bell, 22 for Conner. Or receptions, rather, receiving yards. Conner has more, 239 compared to 144 for Bell last season. Total yards, Conner 581, Bell 515. Conner's had 5 touchdowns. Bell's had three last season. So Conner is leading by a chunk in most of those categories.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down, Bell also, you know, sat out all of preseason. He sat out all of training camp. And I think that's a big reason is that Connor has had time to practice before get ready for game time. Connor is not as good as Le'Veon Bell. And there's nothing to convince me that Connor is nearly as good as Le'Veon Bell. And just because Le'Veon Bell is a once-in-a-generation talent, I don't think the Steelers should extend Le'Veon Bell because I don't think you need a once-in-a-generation talent to win the Super Bowl at running back position.
I agree.
But he's not Le'Veon Bell, and that's just it. He's a great player. He's a great running back. If you get a power back to pair him with, they can be a great tandem that could get you a Super Bowl. But again, that's the thing with the running back position is that it is extremely replaceable. The Steelers have a great offensive line. That is the big reason as to why we've seen these great running backs, you know, happen with Connor and Bell. Bell is a great player. He blocks, catches, and runs better than any other running back in the league. And when he's coming back week 7 or week 8, when he does come back, because I think week 7 is the bye. So week 8, that first game when he's back, I'm giving him the ball. And he may be a bit slow. He may be a bit slow start, and I'll give Connor like 10 carries or so that game. But if it comes playoff time and Connor's getting 50% of the carries, that's just ridiculous. Bell is your number one playmaker. Bell is who the offense should run through.
I'm so on the fence on this. I was with you until yesterday when I saw these statistics, because it's hard to say that these numbers, I mean, you can look at strength of schedule and make those comparisons compared to last year, I guess. But when you look at just the numbers with no other influence into that decision, James Conner has played as good as Le'Veon Bell did in the first 5 games of last season.
He's played as good as a unrested, unready Le'Veon Bell.
Correct.
A ready,
correct,
prepared,
and what
practices
makes you think
James Conner.
That when Le'Veon Bell comes back, as we've been seeing him, you know, partying up in Miami during these holdout weeks, what makes you think that he can perform to a level better than what James Conner is right now?
Maybe he's been dancing to El Mexican. Dancing to El Mexican. I don't know. I mean,
I agree with you that you have to operate this. You can't think of it like, oh, well, he held out, so he shouldn't get the majority of the carries. You put the ball in the hands of the better player.
Yes.
I'm not convinced now at this point that he will be in that first week returning, having apparently not practiced really at all.
No, I don't think that first week, I think Connor should get, you know, 10 carries around there. I still think Bell should get majority of them, but it should be closer to a 50-50 split.
I think that the leash in that second week back for Bell, you let him start that game with James Connor as a pure backup. And if it's not going well at halftime, if the numbers are not lining up, then you've got to look at legitimately putting James Connor in ahead of Le'Veon Bell.
I just think when come playoff time, I think there's zero reason that Bell should not be your future back. There's zero reason that Bell should not be the guy that the offense runs through. Because Bell, for the past, you know, since he's been in the league, since he's, you know, when he's not hurt or suspended, he is the guy that the offense runs through. So I think when Bell comes playoff time, Bell's the guy you got to go. The first 2 weeks, I agree. I think Bell should be given a leash with Connor.
Yeah.
As Zarek, since Connor has performed well when given the opportunities. But when playoff time comes around, I'm going Le'Veon Bell. There's nothing from this offense that convinces me that they can right now win the Super Bowl without Bell. If they win next offseason, when they have time to find another running back to pair with Connor, then yeah, I think they can move on from Bell in the offseason.
Sure.
But right now, I don't think they're prepared to be without Bell. And I said you don't need Bell to win a Super Bowl, because you don't. Eagles had a committee, Patriots had a committee. Falcons have a great running back, but they had a committee. Panthers had a committee. Seahawks had Lynch. But other than the Seahawks, there's really no one that, you know, Broncos had a committee. There's really no team that won a Super Bowl or was in the Super Bowl that had an offense that was driven by predominantly a star running back. You know, they all had committees. They've all had a pair of good running backs. So there's nothing to me that says that, hey, we need Le'Veon Bell to win this, or the Steelers need Le'Veon Bell to win the Super Bowl. But they're not prepared as well as those teams were at the running back position behind Connor and Bell. Because, I mean, you can give it to Stephen Ridley, who has done nothing. I believe he had one carry for no yards yesterday. I mean, it's something that, you know, in the off season, I like the future without Bell, but for this year, the second half of the year, I'm giving Bell the ball.
Yeah, and I think that I don't buy the arguments that the drama of Bell returning is going to be somehow extremely detrimental to this team, and that, you know, there's this hidden hatred in the locker room, and that it's all going to come out whenever Bell returns. I think this team has shown over the past many seasons that they will tolerate any amount of drama, and that includes Mike Tomlin, that they really just show it. They have a lot of, it appears to have a lot of infighting during the week, but when it comes time on Sunday or whenever the game is to play, they put all that behind them and are able to perform in spite of all the
So you don't the think drama. There's any chemistry issues on the team?
I think they're genuine. Yes, I think there are a lot of them, and I think that those spill out during the week, but I think that this season is no more, you know, there's no more drama this year than there has been in years past, and it's not going to
spill out into
the games this year if it hasn't in the past couple of seasons.
Do you think that drama, though, has been preventing them from getting over the top, from being able to pass the Panthers? From the Jaguars and the Patriots?
You can make an argument that the main storyline with all this drama with Ben and, like, is he going to retire? That was the big storyline last season, and I don't think it really affects them when they go out there to play. Somehow Mike Tomlin has gotten that group of guys to put all that behind them when they go out on the field.
He's never had a losing season, which is impressive.
I don't think that changes when Le'Veon Bell returns, even though early in the season we heard a lot of these guys, including like the NFLPA rep Foster, saying that Bell should be here. I don't think that when he returns there's going to be any bad blood shown on the field.
I mean, I don't think there will be either. Maybe they'll have some arguments in training camp, but if the Steelers are in the playoff hunt, they're going to welcome back the best running back in the league with open arms, because you want to win, and he is the best back in the league.
And I'm sure you'll hear the little comments in the sports radio in town, and everyone's going to jump all over
the
it. That there's so much infighting, and this team can't make it to a Super Bowl with, you know, this level of drama in the locker room. But
I mean, I'm sure we'll say something like that, around that time.
Sure, but I don't think when it comes time to the playoffs that is going to be like the defining thing on the field is, oh, look at this group of guys unable to perform because of all the drama in the locker room.
I mean, it's if they have to go up against, you know, the Chiefs or I don't know, what the Jaguars only have one win, don't they?
I believe so.
Let me double check. The Patriots are struggling this year, but if they go up against one of those teams, those great teams, that, you know, there's nothing to me that believes that the Patriots won't figure things out, Jaguars won't figure things out, and all that stuff. But if they go up against one of those teams in the playoffs with their chemistry issues, it's tough for me to see them, you know, be on the same page and move on. Because look at how the offense has looked. I mean, how many times yesterday did you hear, oh, we got connection issues between Ben and AB?
Yep.
How many times did we hear that during the game?
Yeah.
I mean, the Steelers have – Ben has not been – you know, in the right mindset in terms of being on point with his running, with his wide receivers. I mean, his connection to Juju has been fine, but in terms of everybody else, you know, he hasn't been as good as he has been. And when Bell comes back, that adds another key cog, adds somebody that, you know, was your number two receiver for years and years and years. I mean, it adds another weapon, but does it also add somebody that, you know, Ben is not comfortable throwing to right out of the gate?
I don't buy it.
I mean, the first 4 weeks of last year, like you said, with the running, his stats overall were down.
Yeah, I just don't see if that is the case, and we're talking the, you know, week 8, 9 that Ben is having trouble adjusting to Le'Veon Bell being on the field. Even though Le'Veon Bell skipped out on 7 weeks of the season, I'm not blaming him for that. It's Ben's job to find him on the field when he's out there. That becomes Ben Roethlisberger's responsibility and his fault if in week 8 of the season he's having trouble finding a guy on the field.
I mean, I agree. He's on pace. Or I think it was Dunlap that tweeted this out, but Colin Dunlap, who tweeted out, you know, Ben is on pace for the highest single season passing yards record, and Antonio Brown is having statistically his worst year. Still a great year, year, but statistically the worst year of his career. I mean, that shows you how many weapons are in that offense and everything.
For sure, they're capable.
All right. Well, Dakota, thank you for being my new co-host on the show.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on today, Logan.
So be sure to come back and next Monday at 3, we'll be here for the rest of the semester. Logan Carney, Dakota Lamb of Sports with Carney featuring Dakota Lamb. I think that's what we're going to call it.
All right.
Sports with Carney featuring Dakota Lamb. A Logan Carney production from RMU Radio. Let's just see how long that we can make this. How long we can make this title. But anyway, thank you all for joining us. Be sure to download the podcast from RMU Radio. I'm sure we'll put it on social or something like that. Who knows? Whatever happens with this show. But thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next week. How many secrets can you keep? Because there's this tune I found that makes me think of you somehow when I play it on repeat. Until I fall asleep, spilling drinks on myself.